Hello, this is your Polycast for Thursday, April 7th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Donald Trump supporters in Minnesota stand by their man. Governor Dayton makes a push for upgrading two state-run hospitals. The governor has stopped non-essential state employee travel to Mississippi after that state enacted a law this week that allows businesses to deny service to people based on their sexual orientation. Dayton recently announced a similar travel prohibition to North Carolina in response to new limits there on gay and transgender rights. The DFL governor told reporters yesterday that he views the Mississippi law as an egregious violation of people's constitutional rights.
I respect anybody's religious beliefs. That's a First Amendment right. But to say anybody can say for whatever, these are my beliefs, that I don't have to follow the laws of equal rights, equal guarantees, equal protections, equal services to people based on their sexual orientation is a fundamental violation of their constitutional guarantees, which have been established by federal law, longstanding.
Some Republicans have questioned why there is any non-essential state employee travel anywhere. Dayton has said his critics should honor his moral decision. Wisconsin Republicans said no to Donald Trump in a big way this week. Some think Trump's poor showing in the Badger State is a sign of more problems ahead for him. Still, millions hope Trump will become president. Reporter Mark Sedeklik talked about the race with some Trump supporters in Minnesota.
51-year-old Wally Andrus.
Nice to meet you. Heard you on the radio.
Met me on a park bench in downtown Minneapolis to talk about why he likes Donald Trump.
He's the only one that's addressing my concerns and representing my concerns right now and being willing to say stuff about him.
Andrus lives in Golden Valley. He works as an investment accountant. Andrus is upset that the government keeps getting bigger and more expensive. But he says his biggest concern is illegal immigration. He says foreigners are driving down wages and taking jobs from U.S. citizens.
If you hear somebody say, well, you know, illegal immigrants are the only ones that'll pick vegetables for $5 an hour. Well, if they weren't there to pick them, maybe the owners of these fields would have to pay an American $10 an hour because there wouldn't be anybody to pick his vegetables for them. Yeah, it would probably cost us more when we go to the grocery store, but at least I know it's going to an American who needed a job.
Andrus says Trump's call for a wall between the U.S. and Mexico is doable. He allows that it might be a bit much to get the Mexican government to pay for it. Why not, he says, put the bill on American companies that move jobs south?
He could say, okay, well, if you want to have your factory over there, it's going to cost you more to sell your goods in the United States. And that's how they end up paying for it, whether it's actually Mexico or the businesses that do have production facilities or move jobs to Mexico.
Andrus says losing Wisconsin is not going to hurt Trump's chances of winning the GOP presidential nomination.
I think there's way too many people who are fed up with the Republicans in Washington and the so-called elite establishment people who really are disconnected with what's going on.
Andrus says he's never voted for a Democrat. That's not the case for Trump supporter Marilyn Geller.
Hello.
She's 61 and has voted for Paul Wellstone, Bill Clinton, and Barack Obama. She says she's a Democrat.
I am, except for this year.
Geller runs a daycare with her daughter in Bemidji.
Marilyn's Munchkin's Childcare.
Marilyn Geller also likes Trump's tough talk about illegal immigration, and she thinks he'd up the fight against terrorism.
You know, it doesn't really talk about how he's going to take care of it. But I think that people think that, you know, because he is so adamant about it and because he is so anti what has been done previous to take care of ISIS, I think people are thinking that, yeah, maybe he will.
Regardless of what a President Trump would do, Geller says political payback would not drive his decision making.
He doesn't owe anybody anything. You know, he doesn't have to give anybody any favors. And it seems like in the political field that, you know, people depend on other people's money to get them through and then in turn owe them favors.
That's a big deal for many Trump supporters, including Republican Scott Gregory, a 35-year-old who sells mortgages in Edina.
I like the fact that he's self-funding his campaign. I think he's not going to be a sellout like the rest.
Gregory says the GOP has consistently let him down and he's had enough.
I want to see change. I think the establishment has had their time. It's kind of like going back to the same girl that keeps breaking your heart. How many times do you keep going back to that person? You know, at what point do you say, I'm done with you? And that's kind of the point where I think I'm at.
National polls suggest about 2 out of 3 Americans are angry with government. While high, that's down slightly from a few years ago. Still, University of Minnesota political science professor Catherine Pearson says voter frustration caught a lot of experts off guard this election cycle.
Journalists, political scientists, pollsters, I think a lot of people really just missed how angry the electorate is.
And not just on the Republican side. Consider Bernie Sanders and his anti-establishment get the big money out of politics call for a revolution that's defeated Hillary Clinton in 7 of the last 8 states that have voted. Covering politics, I'm Mark Zedeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
Governor Mark Dayton says urgent upgrades are needed at 2 state-run mental health facilities, and he's calling on lawmakers to come through this session with the necessary funding. Dayton wants $177 million to improve buildings and boost staffing levels at the Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center and the Minnesota Security Hospital in St. Peter. Employees from both facilities say the money is needed to make the places they work safe. Tim Pugmire has the story.
Jackie Spangers has been a nurse at the Anoka Treatment Center for 20 years, but it's only been since 2013 that she's considered it a dangerous place to work. She said that's when a change in state law required the psychiatric hospital to admit county jail inmates along with other mentally ill patients. Spangers, who also serves as the local union president, said there were 55 injuries in Anoka last year. She's been injured, too.
We're walking around wounded, and we feel like punching bags. Getting pounded in the face or head leaves you with serious injuries, some that can end your career. Concussions, headaches, memory loss, open wounds, broken bones, and eye injuries are common.
Spangers said Anoka needs security improvements and more frontline staff to keep both workers and patients safe. The facility is also facing a potential loss of federal funds. And there have been cases of patients assaulting staff at the state security hospital in St. Peter. Employees there shared similar concerns at a news conference called by the governor. Nurse Ann Meltreder said she's seen countless assaults at the facility. She said that there aren't enough nurses to take care of what she described as very complex patients.
Nurses come in knowing that they're going to work multiple overtime shifts a week, and that's just kind of become status quo, and it's very difficult.
Governor Dayton said Anoka and St. Peter have suffered from persistent neglect and underfunding. He wants the legislature to back $125 million in capital improvements and $52.3 million in spending increases aimed at the 2 facilities. Dayton said the problems can no longer be ignored.
This is not a matter of choice. This is a matter of responsibility that we have. I share with the legislature to the staff, very dedicated staff at both facilities, who endure far more than they should because of these deficiencies, and the patients there who are Minnesotans who are entitled to a quality care that right now cannot also be provided to the standards that we have.
DFL Senator Kathy Sharon of Mankato, chair of the Health, Human Services, and Housing Committee, commended Dayton for his funding push. Sharon, whose district includes St. Peter, also commended the workers for a years-long campaign to raise awareness about the increasing dangers they face.
And they were a drumbeat over a long period of time, simply refusing to let the legislature have a deaf ear to what was happening in this part of our mental health system.
Dayton's proposal faces a tough road in the Minnesota House, where majority Republicans are reluctant to take on additional state spending in a non-budget year. They also want a significantly smaller bonding bill than the one Dayton has proposed. Republican Representative Paul Torkelson of Hanska, the chair of the House Capital Investment Committee, said worker safety at state facilities should be a high priority. But Torkelson said he's not yet convinced that the bonding bill is the key to addressing those issues.
I'm not sure it's directly related to the bonding proposals. There is some relationship, but I think some of those issues with worker safety could be dealt with in spite of what we do in bonding.
Torkelson said work continues on the House bonding bill proposal, but he did not specify when it will be released. Covering politics, I'm Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A coalition of black leaders in Minnesota is calling for a number of legislative reforms to end the state's enduring racial disparities. From changes in drug sentencing to new startup money for black-owned businesses, the proposals are aimed at lifting up Minnesota's African-American and African immigrant communities. Laura Ewan has the story.
The gaps in the quality of life between blacks and whites in Minnesota are vast. They span across housing, health, education, and so many other sectors. But a fast-ticking clock, thanks to a short legislative session, means that only so much can be done at the Capitol. That's why Minneapolis Urban League President Steve Belton says the coalition is focusing, for the time being, on the economy, criminal justice, and helping black immigrants.
Those are the things that we are prioritizing for purposes of this session. Yeah. But we will be back. Yeah. In 2017, 2018, and beyond. This is a start.
Belton was flanked by dozens of community leaders who, he admitted, haven't always seen eye to eye on how to fight for racial justice. He stood beside organizers with Black Lives Matter Minneapolis, Neighborhoods Organizing for Change, legislators, and Somali American nonprofit leaders. Today, though, he said, they were united. And what lit that fire beneath them? Recent census data showing household income for blacks in the state fell by 14%.
That was a wake-up call for all of us. African-Americans, as well as the broader community.
Jeff Hassan is executive director of the African-American Leadership Forum. There are different theories on why blacks have lost wealth in the state over a one-year period, but he said Minnesota can no longer afford to allow chronic unemployment and lack of access to capital in black communities to continue. The coalition is seeking $75 million in public and private money for a new program that would dole out loans and grants for black-owned businesses. Hassan says at first he wasn't sure this was the most needed approach to solving income inequality between blacks and their peers.
But what I was told and what I've since learned is that African-American and other business of color employ African-American people of color in much greater proportion than others do. Right now, our businesses are underrepresented in both the public and private sector, and we're trying to increase that representation because we know it's going to increase employment.
The coalition is also calling for policy changes. Recently, Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman announced he would decide whether to bring charges in fatal police shootings rather than taking the cases to a grand jury. This coalition wants to ban grand juries statewide. Misha Grimm of Black Lives Matter Minneapolis also pressed for stronger policies for police body cameras. There are currently no state rules governing their use, and it's up to departments to fashion their own policies.
Officers at this time have the ability to turn cameras on and off whenever they feel like it. Officers at this time have the ability to review their tapes before writing their police statements. And all of these things do not allow us to use body cameras for what they're meant for, which is accountability.
And while community advocates say they're united on these issues of racial equity, the legislature appears to be anything but. DFL Senator Jeff Hayden said he's concerned that Republican leaders in the House have been stalling on hearing various bills aimed at improving the lives of African Americans. Republicans say unless Democrats consider their plan to expand educational tax credits to include private school tuition, they won't consider their spending proposals. Republican Jim Knobloch of St. Cloud says the GOP proposal would help close the educational achievement gap. Hayden says those tax credits amount to vouchers and are a non-starter. Laura Ewan, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.